mind?
I have an open mind.
Thank you.
Yeah, yes, Chair, I have an open mind also.
Yes, I come with an open mind.
Yes, Chair, I come with an open mind.
I come with an open mind, Chair, thank you.
I come with an open mind as well, thank you.
I come with an open mind.
Yes, I come with an open mind, Madam Chairman.
And Councillor Tillotson.
I come with an open mind, Chair.
Agreed, Chair.
Is that better? Oh, gosh. I have two declarations of interest to make. The first is item B, 33 Station Street, Loughborough. This is in my ward, but this case has been dealt with entirely by my co-councillor, Councillor Jenny Tillotson. I've not had anything to do with this, and I'm happy that I can come to this with an open mind. And the second one is item C, 31 Orchard Estate, Quorn. This property belongs to a Labour councillor. She has not discussed this property with me at all in any way, and I come to it with an open mind.
Likewise, concerning 31 Orchard Estate, that is a fellow Labour councillor. I have had no discussions on this matter with her, and I come here with an open mind.
Madam Chair, thank you. Item one, I have a family member who works within the Barrett Group. I've not spoken to him about this. He's not been involved, and I come with an open mind.
Thank you, Chair. Item two, I'm speaking against this application, so I won't be taking part in the debate or the vote. And item three, as my other co-councillors, the owner of the property is a co-councillor. She's not spoken to us about it, and I have an open mind on that one, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Item four, I know the applicant very well and I've worked for him in the past, so I perhaps best not vote on that item.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Before I start, I'd just like to bring members' attention to the extras paper that should be on the desk in front of you. There are a couple of amendments, and there are also reports of the further representations that have been received since completing the report. There's also been a couple of letters submitted. one from the university since the extras report was written. It's considered that all the matters raised in the latest letters have been covered in both the report and the extras sheet. If we could have the map. So, as stated in the report, the application has been brought to Plans Committee because it relates to a major strategic proposal which is of significant public interest. The development plan and policy context is detailed in full in the report, but I think it's worth the time just to mention the key policy CS23, which relates to the Loughborough University and Loughborough Science and Enterprise Park, which the abbreviation is LSEP in the report, which allocates 35 hectares of land to the east of Snelsnook Lane for phase three, and of particular relevance to this application is the 42 hectares to the west of Snelsnook Lane for phase four. For these reasons, a full copy of the policy is copied on pages 25 and 26. I would imagine we will be referring to that policy, CS23, on pages 25 and 26 quite a lot. So, as members will be aware from visiting the site, the application is bordered to the north by the A512, where currently the project led by Leicestershire County Council is being underway. To the side is Snelsnook Lane to the east, and there's rolling fields to the west and a staggered boundary to the south. That borders the Longcliff Golf Club and then the access to the club itself. The application site is a series of agricultural fields, and again, members will be aware of the rolling nature of the site. In particular, when we visited Hurst Farm and came down the axis, you'll be aware of the height of that land and the way there's a natural valley around the brook in the middle of the site, and it rises up slowly back up to the back of the site, so the southern end of the site. This is particularly relevant when we come on to the parameters plan, which was briefly discussed on the coach itself. So there's a public footpath which runs down the west side of the motorway and then cuts across the edge of the golf course and Jameson's plantation. There are no designated or non-designated heritage assets on or bordering the site, but on the opposite side of the 512 is the Grade 2 Registered Park and Garden of Garendon and the Grade 2 Listed Lodge to Garendon Park, both of which are about 25 metres away from the most northern point of the site. As I said, the site is gently undulating, with heights varying from 70 metres above datum to 87 metres above datum. The proposal, the application is an outline application considering access only. That's it. So, with all other matters to be considered at reserved matters stage, the application identifies the main access onto the A512 Ashby Road and two secondary access points onto Snelsnook Lane. The development description is long and detailed, and it's for a reason, because that will in itself will form part of the permission if members go with officer recommendation. As detailed in the report, and from what I've just said, it's considered by officers that the proposal accords with the aims of both policies CS1, but most importantly, policies CS23. If we can go to the next slide. It's not the best of slides, but this has come out of the transport assessment, which in turn supports the planning application. You'll see there are, five numbers going across. These represent where the traffic surveys were done, but I also want to go across and talk through the proposal and what's happening at these junctions. As I said, so from the circle on one on the M1 junction, there is a suite of works that are being taken on that junction 23 roundabout, land to the west at Shepshed, and land obviously across to the east on the 512. And where 2 is where there's a new roundabout going in, as well as the dualling.
All of that works, all of those works, sorry, are being managed and led by Leicestershire County Council and are separate to both the Garendon application to the north and the Wilson-Bowden application to the south. So, but point two on the map is important because that's where the roundabout is going, a four-arm roundabout, the southern part of which will form the access to the Wilson-Bowden site. If you go across to the... It's actually above three, is the junction of Snelsnook Lane and the A512. As part of that suite of works by county, there are also works to that junction. And as we work down Snelsnook Lane to three, there are two points of access, yeah, one about there, one slightly further down, that are proposed as part of this proposal onto Snelsnook Lane. If I go carry on back down to four, you've got the Nampanton Crossroads. The Local Highway Authority consultee response is very detailed. One of the junctions it talks about in quite some detail is the Nampanton Crossroads. It is proposed to, as mitigation, to put an extra lane in on the Priory side of that junction, Priory pub side of that junction, and that sits within the planning obligation as a contribution of about £290,000 towards that as part of the mitigation. And then zooming over to the top corner is the last bit of mitigation, which is also sits within the 106 to do with improvements to the junction there, so Epinal Way and the A512. We can come back to point three and the next slides, if my memory serves me right, yes. So that's the detail of the county work. So you've got obviously the roundabout, and then to the bottom of that roundabout is where the access to this site, this application site, will come in. Then on the far edge of that plan is the top of Snelsnook Lane and the 512. If we go to the next drawing, these are the two points of access proposed onto Snelsnook Lane, which again forms part of this outline application. The one to the left, as I'm looking at it, the straight one, yep, that's the most northerly access of the two. It's about where we park the bus today. And then the contrary to that, that's the most southerly point of access which is proposed. There's just two points of access on Snelsnook Lane. You'll notice, particularly on the left, but also on the parameters plan, which is coming up in a bit, there are circles around there as well. And the reasoning for that is it gives a degree of flexibility depending on what happens with Snelsnook Lane, where those two T junctions can, if required, be upgraded to roundabouts. That land is reserved for that purpose, and there are obligations in recommendation A that reflect that. There's also another obligation within recommendation A that seeks contribution from the applicant if there are any further works to Snelsnook Lane, and that goes from the right-hand junction to the junction with the A512, so it's proposed works there. For the next slide. Okay, so this is the parameters plan. So whilst this is an outline application with the three points of access, the one to the north and the two off to the side on Snelsnook Lane, we are also going to attach some further constraints to that, one of which is this parameters plan, which is in front of you. And that does two things. It controls the finished floor level of the various plots, and it also controls the ridge, the maximum ridge height of the various plots. You probably can't see it on the screen there, but the various colours relate to various different heights. But the important thing to note is the light mauve on the frontage is about 7 metres high. So back from that is about 10 metres high. The dark blue sites, yep, they're a maximum of 15 metres high. And they sit within the natural depressions of the site. So this, if members follow officer recommendation, would be a detailed plan in one of the conditions in recommendation B. Any further planning applications, any reserved matters applications on the back of this would have to conform with this parameters plan. That's the next one. And then the second plan that we'd also attach as a condition and as a constraint is the phasing plan. And quite simply, we are looking for the phasing to go from front to back, west to east. So again, there are two reasons for that. This is an important site. It is a prominent site. It's on the gateway into the town. It needs to be done properly, and policy CAS 23 is very strict on that. We want this to be built out at the front first, and we want to set the standard at the front and then work back from that. It also has the effect of screening the further development with the development which is completed on the frontage. But also, following that sequence, 1A and 2A are the ancillary, form part of the ancillary hub. So we want to make sure that the ancillary parts follow on from some of the original development and that they don't come first, basically. So again, this plan, this phasing plan, would sit within one of the conditions in recommendation B, and they'd have to follow this sequence. And this last plan, I emphasise this is an indicative plan. So this is a representation of what could come forward on this site. In principle, it accords with what we put forward in the with the conditions, in that, for example, the green infrastructure we're looking for, again, part of policy CS23 is looking for at least 40% green infrastructure, which is 30% on site and 10% on the plots themselves. This gives you an idea of what that would look like, and the purpose of that is to continue that campus feel, which has worked very successfully on phases 1 and 2 of the Science Park. It has a very different feel to it, and we want to make sure that important feature is carried on. But I do emphasise this is an indicative master plan, but this is something what it could look like with the parameters that we're setting with the conditions and the plans. Okay, the map inset on the right-hand side is actually taken from the Venus Memorial in Garradon Park. You've got two long views, as you can see there, yep, and then one cross-section. The idea to show here is that how it sits in the landscape. So from the important viewpoint off to the north in the Garradon Park, that's the view that you get across. As I said before, the bigger buildings, which be a maximum of 15 metres high, sit in the natural depressions. There's also an element of cut and fill as well, where they'd actually be lower in the ground. This actually is an extract from the Cultural Heritage Chapter and Environmental Statement, but on the opposite side of the application site, which is outlined in red there, you've got a circle with two arrows up the top, further up. Yeah, that's where the viewpoints were for the two cross sections, and that's also the viewpoints for the next photo montages that come forward. If you want to click next. So that's the view from the Venus Memorial now. So the bank of trees just below there, that's the 512. And if we go through, that's a photo montage of the buildings as proposed on the master plan from the same viewpoint. And then as we go forward, there are two more with more mature landscaping to it. Just to give you an idea of how it sits in the wider environment. Okay, we're going to do the next one. So then very quickly run through those chapter headings. I will do it quickly. In terms of highways, the Local Highways Authority advice is that, in its view, the impacts of the development on highway safety would not be unacceptable. I think I put it in a better way, it would be acceptable. And when considered cumulatively with other developments, the impacts on the road network would not be severe. Based on the information provided, the development therefore does not conflict with the MPPF or any of the policies in the core strategy. Further to this, the main axis is off the A512 with a four-armed, partially signalised roundabout, as I've described. This roundabout would also provide access to the Garradin SUE, which was gained permission, I think it was last year, located north of the development site, both of which were required as well conditions. So the Garradin site to the north, where the viewpoint is from the Venus Memorial, has a negative condition that they can't occupy any site until the roundabout and the duelling works is done, and it's the same, or it's proposed to be the same on this application. So that sits in one of the conditions in recommendation B. The roundabout, as said, forms part of the wider M1 motorway junction 23 improvement works and is also obligated to the same consent. The applicant proposes two secondary accesses, as I've described, and both to be priority T junctions. And the Highway Authority and applicant have undertaken thorough traffic modelling and impact assessment. Following on from the strategic traffic modelling, the developer has undertaken detailed traffic modelling of local junctions. The applicant undertook a sensitivity scenario, a summary of which is copied on page 31 and 32. So, they did the detailed traffic modelling and they did a sensitivity test of that, and the summary of that is in your report on pages 31 and 32. The Highway Authority advises the Planning Authority that subject to planning conditions and obligations highlighted through these observations, the development proposals are acceptable and the development would therefore accord with the policies. Further, Highways England raises no objections subject to the inclusion of a planning condition to secure the M1 junctions are in place prior to first occupation of the development, if it is granted. I don't go into as much detail on the remainder of the chapter headings. In terms of heritage assets, there are no listed buildings with the application site, but our number are located within the vicinity of the site. There is a plan extract on page 22 of the report which shows these, and they are on the north side of the A512. In relation to the heritage assets, the conclusion is it's in accordance with the Act, the guidance contained with the MPPF on core strategy CS14, and it's considered the proposed development will cause less than substantial harm to the significance of the designated archaeological and heritage assets and will be considered appropriate within the aims and objectives of the legislation, policies of the development plan and the MPPF as a material consideration. Jumping to the quality and design of the development, this doesn't actually form part of this proposal, but the conditions and the parameters are set within the recommendations A and B that a good quality bespoke development can come forward of the appropriate design. For this reason, these conditions are attached, and there's also one that any reserve master application needs to be supported by design and access statement. It's considered that subject to conditions, a suitable design can be achieved. This would need to be brought forward as part of a future reserve matters application for the development to be considered. In terms of the layout and the indicative master plan, which was up on the screen just, for the reasons outlined in the report, it is considered that the indicative layout could be capable of delivering a high-quality development. This would need to be brought forward as part of a reserve matters submission, again, but it's considered that it could accord with the aims and the objectives of policies and the MPPF. Landscape impact. The site is allocated for a business park within a core strategy, and as such, there is an understanding that the site would be developed. Policy CS23 has a very clear policy structure to deliver development that accords with the local landscape and follows the established principles of phases 1 and 2 of the science park. It is considered that subject to planning conditions, a suitable design and layout can be achieved that balances the existing landscape conditions with further mitigation. This again would need to be brought forward as part of a future reserve matters submission. In terms of the long-term management and of the open space and the green infrastructure, as I said before, the green infrastructure is an important part of this overall site allocation, as reflected in the wording in CS23. The parameters plan and indicative master plan show compliance with this stated aim. The planning conditions are recommended which seek compliance with this important green infrastructure aspiration, and the Section 106 agreement of the heads of terms which will secure the setting up of a maintenance company to manage the site's wide green infrastructure and landscaping. therefore considered on this matter that the planning framework is in place to ensure the long-term management of open space and green infrastructure. In relation to loss of agricultural land, again, the site is an allocated site, so this has been considered as part of the allocation itself, but the development of these fields was a consideration in the allocation of the site for the Science and Enterprise Park and the core strategy. The siting of the axis, the indicative layout and the green infrastructure show that the existing field boundaries have, where possible, been retained, and with the further requirements of policy to CS23 and with the suggested conditions, it is considered that the proposal accords with the aims of the policies. In terms of flooding and drainage, both the local lead flood authority and environment agency have no objections, subject to the conditions which are attached in the report. Overall, it's considered that there be no sustainable reason, subject to appropriate conditions, why a development could not be brought forward at the reserve matters stage that could accord with the requirements of policy CS16 of the core strategy and the aims of the MPPF. Ecology, wildlife and trees. It is considered that there would be no sustainable reason, subject to appropriate conditions, why a development could not be brought forward at the reserve matter stage that could accord with the requirements of policy CS16 and the core strategy and the aims of the MPPF. In terms of the retail impact, and this is to do with the ancillary uses set within the hub, both of which are on the parameters plan but also in detailed and quite some detail in the application description. So the separate uses have the maximum floor areas within it, and as I say, the application description forms part of the permission should it be approved. So an assessment of the impact of the vitality and viability of the centres in the catchment of the Science and Enterprise Park has also been carried out, and the Borough Council consider that the proposal is reasonable in this aspect. And further to this, with the 106 agreement controlling the uses and the suggested conditions, one of which was the sequencing of the phasing, where the ancillary does come after, the hub does come after the first two parts along the frontage, and then 2A. So 1A, 2A, and 1A and 2A being the ancillary part. The proposal is considered acceptable in this regard. In relationship to neighbouring properties, the comments from objectors and nearby residents in relation to impact from additional traffic are noted, but with the conditions suggested by the Environment Health Officer and the local Highways Authority relating to a site-wide travel plan and construction management plan, it is considered that the proposal would protect the amenity of nearby residents in this respect. And this aspect, then, it's considered that the issues of concern raised on this aspect of the proposals could be designed out at the reserve matters stage. In conclusion, the application proposals seek outline permission for an extension to the Science and Enterprise Park with the points of access details and all other matters retained for further reserve matters application. The site is allocated for this use in the adopted core strategy with a detailed list of policy requirements. Having carefully considered the application submission, all consultation responses and the views of neighbouring and nearby residents and the ward member, it is considered that the proposals accord to planning policy. So with the amendments detailed in the extra sheet, recommendations A and B stand. Thank you, Chair.
There we are. Let's start again. We have three speakers, and we have Mr. Andrew Wade and Mr. David Ward and one of the ward councillors, Councillor Smidowich. I would just like to explain to you that we have a traffic light system here. Each speaker has 5 minutes, and it's green, amber, red. Green goes on at the start of when you speak. When it goes to amber, you will hear, and that means you've got 1 minute left. When it goes to red, I'm afraid you're cut off in your prime, and that's it. No more can be said. So, Mr. Wade, if you'd like to come forward, please. And if you'd like to just sit at one of the microphones behind the officers, behind the young lady, and your 5 minutes will start when you're ready now.
Thank you. First of all, I would like to state that I'm speaking on behalf of and representing all the individuals who expressed a desire to speak at this meeting. We have objections to this development going ahead as follows. Firstly, overbearing impact from development. The application is for a mixed-use hub, including shops, financial and professional enterprises, restaurants and cafes, drinking establishments. I assume this will include bars and pubs, a hot food takeaway, a hotel, a nursery, a gym, as well as the Science and Enterprise Park. Given this, I'm not sure whether this development is a science park or the creation of a township on the edge of Loughborough. And surely, if approved, we would be creating a roadside service facility for motorway traffic. The provision of these ancillary elements, as well as the main science park, would adversely change the character of the surrounding area. In addition, the provision of the mixed-use facilities would undoubtedly adversely impact business and trade in Loughborough town centre. And we should not forget that we already have the Loughborough University Science and Enterprise Park already under construction. Surely this new proposed development will adversely impact the Loughborough University development. I understand that Loughborough University also have concerns regarding the new proposed development. Secondly, traffic issues. The development would undoubtedly cause increased traffic on Snelsnook Lane and the surrounding area. There's already heavy vehicular traffic congestion on Snelsnook Lane and at the Priory Crossroads, especially at peak times. The Priory Crossroads is already severely over capacity. The development will undoubtedly make congestion even worse. The documentation provided by the local highways authority confirmed that the crossroads is over capacity and the situation will only get worse. Even with improvements, the crossroads will still be over capacity. I understand that a left turn lane may be provided on Snelsnook Lane at the Priory Crossroads, though I see little data showing any expected benefit due to this improvement. Overall, I do not see the level of detail we should expect regarding traffic impact, so surely we at the very least need to see a more detailed and refined analysis. Local residents are certainly concerned about the increase in traffic, noise, pollution, an increase in HGVs and access to Snelsnook Lane from properties, noting that Snelsnook Lane is already gridlocked at peak times. How would current and new traffic regulations be enforced? What permanent and temporary mitigation would be put in place? Lots of questions and few answers. Finally, building in the open countryside. The development is planned for open countryside. Open countryside in the area is already being significantly reduced. Surely we are at a point where countryside needs to be protected in the area, or be really intent on concreting over every piece of open countryside around Junction 23. Noting that we have had 3 residential developments on Snelsnook Lane in recent years, and the Loughborough University Science and Enterprise Park is now under construction. In summary, we object to the proposal being approved. The proposal is lacking clarity of purpose, will severely impact local businesses and existing enterprises and Loughborough Town Centre, and is fundamentally ill-conceived. You might think that we are anti-development. This isn't true. There have already been 3 residential developments on Snelsnook Lane in recent years, and the construction of the Loughborough University Science and Enterprise Park is underway. What we do seek is a well-thought-out and balanced plan for the area. And surely we have reached a point where we need to protect open countryside and achieve a balance between countryside and excessive development. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you wouldn't mind, please. Thank you. Members of the gallery, we do try to keep this fairly quiet, I'm afraid. If I may now call on Mr. David Ward, the same principle, please, which is 5 minutes, and after you'll get him when you've got 1 minute left. Okay, thank you very much.
Good evening, members, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is David Ward. I'm planning director of Wilson Bowden Development. We are the applicants for the scheme that you have before you tonight. You have already had a very comprehensive report from the officers, and that's been expanded upon the presentation that you've seen tonight. As you know, it concludes that planning permission should be granted. I don't intend to go over that again, and of course my 5 minutes won't allow me that time in any event. But what I would like to do in the few minutes that I have is to just give you a little bit of history, which I think is pertinent and relevant. A large part of this application had its foundation when the Borough Council decided to include this land as part of its science park allocation when it approved and adopted the core strategy back in 2015. Subsequently, over the pursuing 18 months from 2015 into 2016, Wilson Bowden Development sat with the University, the Borough Council and the County Council in preparation of a development framework document that was to guide the coherent and comprehensive development of the science park. That document is the Hawkins-Brown report, which is referred to in the committee report. Soon after that, in 2016, the site was designated as an enterprise zone. And soon after that, the enterprise zone was the beneficiary of some £17 million worth of public sector commitment to deliver the road and new access that was described to you earlier. That was another foundational moment in determining the progress of this planning application coming before you tonight. Subsequent to that, Wilson Bowden Developments became a partner to the University, to the County and to the Borough, as well as Leicestershire LEP, as a member of the Enterprise Zone Steering Group, which was conceived and brought forward to deliver the science park on the west side of Loughborough as part of the strategic development strategy for the town. And we continue to take part on a regular basis with that Enterprise Zone Steering Group. In 2017, October, Wilson Bowden approached the council here at Charnwood with a view to bringing forward an application based around the core strategy and based around a comprehensive and coherently prepared master plan. And we were invited to bring forward that application. During 2018, we carried out extensive public consultation in the pre-application period, and I'm pleased to say that a number of amendments were made in direct response to representations and concerns raised by locals and by statutory consultees. Importantly, during this time, we also worked on an implementation plan as a part of the Enterprise Zone Group with the University, the Borough Council, the County Council. And indeed, that implementation plan for the Enterprise Zone Science Park included a recognition of the delivery of the Wilson Bowden application. Once the application was submitted, and as you have already heard tonight, the statutory consultees, all those who have been invited through the statutory process, have confirmed either support or no objections for the development. And then most recently, in July of this year, Wilson Bowden and the landowners signed a highway agreement with Leicestershire Council to provide significant funding, £1.8 million, and that is referred to in the committee report in the list of Section 106 items. That commitment has already been given to Leicestershire County Council in the form of a Section 278 agreement, together with the release of land to enable the highway works to be completed. In short, members, Wilson Bowden has worked diligently with partners to bring forward this application to the council in a comprehensive and coherent fashion. We believe that it is a matter that should be supported by the Council given the allocation in the core strategy, and I commend it to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ward.
Thank you.
Councillor Smithwich. I think you understand the timing system, don't you, Councillor?
I do. Thank you
very much.
Good evening. There are clear and compelling grounds for this application to be rejected outright or at a minimum deferred to allow for proper engagement as is required by the local plan CS23 and allow further negotiations between the interested parties. It does not accord with CS2, 9, 11, 14, 16, 17, 18 or EV1. Paragraph 7 of the MPPF on pages 14 and 15 of your report make for interesting reading, and I believe this will have an impact on the town. A science park located to the west of the university campus has been a long-term strategic vision of the university, who purchased land to realise the vision, and Charnwood Borough Council and others also made contributions. Over 100,000 square feet has already been developed, and residents and councillors have been supportive until now. This is a unique, once-in-a-generation opportunity for Charnwood to establish itself as a centre of 21st-century knowledge-based industries, which could offer Loughborough international recognition and potentially 9,000 well-paid jobs, equal to that of the Cambridge Science Park. What you are being asked to agree is to a growth-at-any-and-all-cost strategy of a substantial industrial and retail park. The proposed location of the hub will be restrictive for the site as a whole, and it is placed deliberately to attract passing motorway traffic, nothing like the original concept and totally contrary to EV1 and the designation of the land in the local plan. The framework inspector made it clear that all amenities should be ancillary to the science and enterprise park, and therefore what is before you is likely to be challenged. There has been no discussion with the university about the proposed vehicular access across their site, only extensive assumptions made of what is acceptable and may well inhibit some of the university development plans. There are significant unresolved issues around traffic impact in the officer's report, which have been virtually airbrushed out and factually incorrect. There are no pedestrian lights and no meaningful solutions provided. Page 31 and 32 of your report states, the junction currently operates significantly over capacity. In the future, without development traffic, the junction is anticipated to operate significantly over capacity, and this situation is significantly exacerbated when the entire location is tested. The Local Highways Authority reported on the 14th of August that there will be a severe impact with queues extending for kilometres. MPPF states that development should only be refused where there would be an unacceptable impact on highway safety, or where the residual cumulative impacts on the road network would be severe. On the 14th of August, 70 residents came to a public meeting I called, where officers and the developer heard the concerns expressed, including reports that heavy goods vehicles are already using the route as a shortcut, because Epinal Way, the main route in and out of town, is one of the six most congested roads in the borough. Following these reports, I had help from a police response team who monitored approaches to both ends of the line and evidence supporting our concerns. The report submitted to me was then sent on to the Highways Department. I have had no feedback to date. The additional cumulative impact is of genuine concern. Please, remember the heritage and character of this area. We are talking about a lane. a lane which a dictionary defines as a narrow road, typically in a rural area. Exactly what it is. We cannot afford to lose this unique opportunity and have a better considered overall design as an exciting and innovative entry gateway to Loughborough. Thank you.
Please. Thank you. If we have now had all three speakers, so I would like to pass it back to the officer if you want to come back with any clarification or answers to those that are raised, and then it will be opened up to discussion. If I may, officers down there, are you still happy down there, or would you like to move back up here so you can be seen? It's up to you. Okay? You're quite happy there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There are several matters there that have been raised. I am sure members will raise them also. What I will propose is when these issues are raised by members, I will answer that question and refer back to the people that spoke publicly just now. What I would remind them, members, is this is an allocated site. What we're applying for is outline permission to establish parameters effectively for any reserve matters applications that come along. Planning officers consider the application, the proposal, to be policy compliant and remind you of the National Planning Policy Framework, which states that if policies are policy compliant, they should be permitted without delay. And again, just remind members to deal with the planning merits of the application in front of you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a couple of speakers starting. If I could ask Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. There's a few observations and a few questions, if I may, if you'd just indulge me for a few minutes. The couple of points, really, is why is there two accesses onto Snellsnook Lane? Because I can see in the future that's going to end up as a rat run. People coming through from coming off the motorway, etc., coming back up to the Priory. I understand that there is Section 106 money being put into the Nampanton Crossroads with an extra lane, filter lane, which I would estimate would only hold five or six cars, so I can't actually see that that's going to mitigate much of the traffic congestion at that point. It was also alluded to that there is potential scope to go back to the developers and put two roundabouts in at some point. Could we not ask that the Nampanton Crossroads is also looked at that in the same way? So if there's still issues moving forward, that the developers contribute towards any future problem solving at that junction. Traffic is the biggest concern for me on this, not more than anything else. Snellsnook Lane doesn't even have a centre line down it for most of it. It's quite a narrow road, and the proposal is putting two more vehicle access onto that. On what anybody that ever goes near that site at peak times just tries to avoid, in all honesty, because the queue in traffic is at least halfway down Snellsnook Lane at those times. I'll shut up at that point, because I think I could carry on for quite a while on traffic. So traffic is my biggest reservation on this. I've asked a couple of questions about access and whether we can look back at it, so I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
So that we keep it in sort of sequence, would you like to answer the points raised by each councillor as we go round? I think it'll be easier for everybody to understand. So if you may, if you could come back on the points raised by Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Chair, certainly. I think the first question, why two points of access? But that was what was put in front of us. So as I said, we're dealing with the planning application as submitted. Not wanting to put words in the applicant's mouth, when you look at this layout, it's very similar to that which is being agreed in the Hawkins Brown document. which perhaps leads on to a question from Councillor Smidovich, the ward member, when she was questioning the access across the Loughborough University land. The Hawkins Brown document does show a continuation of a road sweeping across east to west. That's not part of this proposal. And the two don't contradict each other in terms of their use. So it's, I would just have to stress, as I would as a planning officer, that both the local highway authority and the highways and Highways England have reviewed this in quite some detail. The applicant has been put through the ringer. They've had an awful lot of questions, an awful lot of assessment to be done, and it is robust. The application is supported by an environmental statement. It's also supported by a transport assessment. The detailing, the methodology is robust. That's the advice that we have got. You talked about, sorry, Councillor Bailey, the Section 106 money for Nampant and Crossroads. The actual wording of the response from the local highway authorities is $290,000 or thereabouts towards the contribution towards works on that junction. So it's not the whole scheme. It's obviously would be led and managed by the County Council. If they have other pots of money they could dip into to do that, then that's their gift. It wouldn't be appropriate as part of this proposal to seek further works to that. This has been reviewed in full, and this is their recommendation. The local highway authority response received on the 14th is comprehensive. It goes through it systematically. It describes the site, it describes the proposals, it goes through each junction and describes the junction and the capacity at the moment, and then the capacity with mitigation. The overall conclusion to all of that being, with the conditions suggested and with the obligations suggested for the 106, this would be acceptable.
I think that's fine. I just wanted to pick up on the roundabout point that you said. The reason that the land is being safeguarded within the application site is because it's within our gift. It's part of the land owned by Wilson Bowden. So we can safeguard that for the future in case that sort of mitigation is needed. Obviously, they don't own anything around the Priory Junction. So the option there, which the Highway Authority have control over, is for a contribution to them to do the mitigation works. And obviously, they've modelled that mitigation. So they can't provide land for a roundabout there, whereas we're safeguarding potentially for the future on the land that they do own.
Thank you. Councillor Tassel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Councillor Bailey more or less said everything that I was going to say. Unfortunately, I am really, really worried about Snell's Nook Lane. It's narrow. There's no provisions for improving it in any way, shape or form until you get to the end, which is between the houses. Houses have now been allowed to build right up to the footpath on that area, so there's no means of being able to widen it other than in front of the Priory. Personally, I don't think that lane is adequate to take two more accesses or exits off of it. I think it will ruin the lane, but apart from that, the traffic will be absolutely horrendous on it. And I wish they would have thought a little bit better and seen what else they could have done without bringing it out onto Snell's Nook Lane.
Thank you. The next speaker, the next councillor asking to speak is Councillor Tillotson. I think we're all aware of the traffic situation, not only in this area but really across the borough. What we have to be careful of is that some of the decisions made regarding traffic are not in the gift of this committee. if highways and Highways England, all we can do is look to mitigate it and suggest mitigation. The officers will explain it further as they're coming there, but we must concentrate on that. We're looking at the other access points as well, and the other parts of this. Snell's Nook Lane, I think we're all fully aware of the problems of Snell's Nook Lane, and therefore this will be a part of the points that we raise, and we're all raising very similar ones. So if the officer would like to respond to Councillor Tassel, and then I'll move on to the next councillor.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Tassel, I think you're basically talking about the capacity on the width of Snell's Nook Lane and whether it was suitable or not. Is that right? I can only go back to the advice that we've been given from both the detailed response from the local highway authority, who have modelled these junctions, modelled the road network to a wider extent as well, not just the immediate environments. And their conclusion is that it, with the mitigation and the obligations and conditions suggested, that it would be acceptable. I think that was what you were talking about.
Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I think my reservations have already been covered, so I won't linger any further on them.
You, councillors.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I've got a few concerns, actually, so I hope you can bear with me. I don't want to labour this about the traffic, but I did write to the lead member. Let me think this right. I did write to the head of service just about my concerns. I haven't had a reply, but it centres around the application submission by the Highways Authority. And it does in there say, despite all reasonable assumptions made by the applicant, given it is known at the time what the specific impact the total allocation of development traffic will be, the LHA would be concerned with the prematurely introducing measures which may not mitigate the impact of the development traffic for the total allocation. And that was really my concern. And it does actually relate back to the LHA and what their thinking was. Now, if they've changed since then, it's very difficult to understand how they can change from that position. I would like to go on and through you, Madam Chairman, ask a few questions. And this comes around CS23 and the phasing of meeting the objectives of what the science part was about, and how this complements the phasing that we've got at the moment. I was a bit concerned in the report that it didn't really bring out all the information that was supplied in the submission from the university. And it was quite interesting to see how they'd actually gone about and said that they were concerned about the phasing and saying this application was premature in terms of the whole aspect or how it fits in with the phasing of the whole sites. And I think the one thing for me is around B1 and B2 and how we actually hold together so we make sure that the technology and science is used, is the use on the site. And I'd leave it, and if I can just get some information on those bits, and if I may, I would like to come back because I'm concerned about the bit about the ancillary bit for the retail. But probably that is enough to go on at the moment. But I would like to come back, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Snart. Who's going to take this?
Thank you, Chair. So, Councillor Snart, sorry, I think there's three key main parts to your question to do with the phasing and prematurity, the B1, B2 use, and you touched upon the ancillary bit. So, taking them in order,
the phasing, I think what you're perhaps referring to is that the university letters of objection and where they raise this particular point. That, as you rightly said, is directly related to policy CS23, which I said already is copied in full in your report. Within the actual policy, it doesn't talk about the ordering of the phasing. This land to the west of Snelswick Lane is called Phase 4. The land on the other side to the east of Snelswick Lane is called Phase 3. But there's nothing in the policy itself that says it has to be done in that order. Now, in the preamble to policy CS23, it does talk about phasing from east to west, but there's nothing in the policy itself that actually restricts it in that order. Taking that one step further, as I said out on site, this is, and it's been said by several of you already tonight, it is an important site. It is in a key gateway spot, and it could end up being a key landmark feature to this site. And it's for those reasons that we've included both the parameters plan and the phasing plan as detailed drawings attached to the outline consent, which is unusual. We want to see the phasing done from front to back and east to west. So if the concern is about the cohesive approach, hopefully that would address that. We have the development to the fore of it. The second point you raised, I think, was to do with the B1, B2 use, which is, yeah, it's a good question. I go back again to the development description, which has the maximum metres squared after each use that's described. Yeah, and that's for good reason, because as I said several times already, that development description up on the board there does form part of the permission. Then attached to that, there will be conditions, and then there will be a Section 106 obligation. Within the obligation, there will be a restriction on changes of use within that B1, B2 use classes order, because as members are probably aware, there is quite a bit that you can do, you can change within the use classes order without needing it. So we tie that down so it sits within the B1, B2, and more importantly, the knowledge-based sector, because that's an important part of CS23, is that it serves the knowledge-based sector and that it conforms with the requirements of that. In other words, it sort of serves for university use or ancillary to that. Unusually, or rather I could flip it the other way, what would normally happen is that would sit quite comfortably within a planning condition. But because this is so important, because it is, as I described out on site, I think this is a very unique site allocation. For the reasons I've described, what we're proposing is that those two controls over the use, in terms of what exactly is the B1, B2 use, and the definition of knowledge-based sector, sit within the legal agreement, which is unusual. And the main reason for that, and I hope the applicant doesn't mind me saying this, is that we retain a better degree of control over that. If, for example, it sat within a condition, as members again will be aware, you could have a Section 73 application to come in to vary that. But because this site allocation, because it is so unique in terms of its the use and what's proposed also in terms of green infrastructure, for example, we thought it was important to have that to sit within the legal agreement. Similarly, the ancillary use is controlled in a number of ways as proposed. It's the floor area is controlled in the development description, the maximum uses of that. It sits within the parameters plan in terms of the maximum floor areas, and it's located within that area. It's also on the phasing plan. So, as I described out on site, the hub to the east of the site, adjacent to, just up on there, would come after the first two parts along the frontage. So it wouldn't be the first, it would be ancillary, but the whole lot isn't going to come forward. So as it says there, it go 1, 1A, 2, 2A. So the ancillary part does seek to serve
the development that comes along, the businesses that occupy that. The actual ancillary definition could also sit within the 106. The CS23 and the Flexible Development Framework Plan, Hawkins Brown, recognises that the hub is a key part of this campus. We're essentially dealing with half of it, and proportionally you have half the hub there. And it needs to sit in a central location, and the services within that ancillary hub are there to serve the business uses that come along. It, with the conditions proposed, with the obligations proposed, officers consider you do have those controls to stop it from becoming a standard business park. The preamble to CS23 is very clear on what it doesn't want. It also points in the direction of, I think it's paragraph 10.5.1, on what would be a suitable type of use. So I understand the concerns of members and members of the public, but as I say, with the conditions suggested, I think we do retain that control and we do get exactly what CS23 is after.
Councillor, would you mind? Someone else has been waiting quite a long time, and then I'll come back to you. Councillor Ranson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got just two queries. Is it my understanding that we're here tonight to actually agree in principle the actual access, the road access? Yes or no?
Yes. But it's a bit more detailed.
That's fine. If the committee were reminded to agree in principle the actual accesses and the infrastructure around those accesses, is it possible that this could come back to this committee again to actually then to reassess whatever it is, you know, to reassess the actual road structures has been put in? No. Oh, sorry.
Thank you. That's a good question. Yeah, so as I've said many times, this is an outline application with three points of access. That's the one to the north and two off to the side on Snell's Nook Lane. And that's it. The rest of it is all up for debate with further reserve matters applications. Having read through the protocol, there's no... it doesn't by default mean that a reserve matters applications come to plans committee. I'd be surprised if they didn't, and of course it could be debated in full then. So if and when any reserve matters applications come in, I would anticipate they would come to committee.
You talked about the accesses being in principle. The accesses for you are in detail. Yes. So the access is in detail, the rest is in principle. And it would come to Plans Committee if it was called in by the board member under the normal constitution.
Seeing the concerns, that is what you've put my mind a little bit at rest, so that if we are reminded to tonight to actually, in principle, to accept the accesses, then we actually, as a committee, could actually ask for this to come back in detail to look at the detail as well. Or am I wrong in that, or am I misunderstanding that? That's all. I'm just thinking of the residents. I'm listening to the concerns around the table. That's all.
We might just be misunderstanding each other. If members were to go with officer recommendation, the reserve matters would deal with the appearance of the buildings, what they look like, their materials, where they stand, their height. The access details, so what the roundabout looks like and what the priority T junctions look like, wouldn't come back because they're part of this application. But the rest, everything apart from those accesses, will come back as a second detailed application.
Sorry, just to add to that, it also includes the internal road. So that can come forward as well.
So in actual fact, we have got the opportunity for the ward councillors to call this back if required to. Yes? Thank you.
Clarified, we make the decision tonight on the access as presented. and the overall principle of development, the details of the development would come back to this committee, as the officers have explained the detail, including the road through the site. So basically you're looking at the access onto the 512 and the two accesses on Snell's Nook Lane, and the rest in principle, the detail and everything else, the quality, the build, the height, the materials, the the green bits, everything else, would come back to this committee as it comes forward from the developer.
Through the chair. Just to add to that, so as an outline application, any reserve matters application would deal with the external appearance of landscaping, the siting layout. That would all have to come forward as part of reserve matters applications. And unusually, in this case, as I said already, we've added two specific plans. Sounded like a Dalek, but it added two specific plans. Yes, the parameters plan and the phasing plan, which are further constraints which wouldn't normally add on to an outline permission, but because of the importance of this site, because of what policy CS23 is setting out, that's why we've added them.
Councillor Snart, you wanted to come back, and then I have another few councillors, some who have not yet spoken. No, if you come back, Councillor Snart, okay. But then I will take councillors that have not yet had a chance to speak, and then go back to the ones that have already spoken. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. The biggest issue I've got is whether this retail part of it is actually ancillary. And it seems to me that if you're going to have two actual units and then have it there in full glory, without all the rest being done, it ain't going to be surviving. So I can't see that as ancillary. What I'm concerned about is in the retail impact, page 42-43, it does give halfway down on 43, proposal includes provision and one or two things, but it doesn't actually include all the other things, which are the shops, the financial professional, restaurants and cafes, drinking establishments, hot takeaway food, hotel. I can't see how that can actually survive with just those two units there. And I go back to the university bit as well. When I was reading that, it said it will impact on their problem whether we're going to bring Burley Court out to the other bit. So I think it's going to be a bit difficult for me to actually understand tonight how that is going to be ancillary when we're looking at it.
I think with the greatest respect, I think now we're getting into the detail of what's in the ancillary.
Sorry, Madam Chairman. I think tonight, if this goes through, that ancillary unit will be there, and it will be actually there to be, and it does actually tell you exactly what it's going to be. So I think it's got to be done tonight.
Yes, if I may go back to the office.
Thank you, Chair. I understand your questions. When you look at the phasing, the parameters plan up above you, and if you flick onto the phasing plan next, Karen, thank you. For example, the box one on the left-hand side or the west side of the spur road, that's not one building. There are several buildings potentially that could come in there, and it's the same with. So. It's a commercial decision as to whether the ancillary hub at 1A comes then, or indeed whether it comes later. The second restriction is the specific floor area in the development description itself. So the various uses are restricted to those specified square metres in the development description, as well as the other extra conditions we're implying here as well. In terms of the retail study, all of the uses within the hub were assessed. In fact, we asked them to do that because we thought we might get questions asked about it. They didn't necessarily have to do the second part to that, which aren't, you know, town centre uses, but they did do that, and the conclusion is as written in the report. You know, it's the viability, the vitality of the town centre wouldn't be affected. As to when that ancillary use comes forward, if this proposal was to gain permission, it would need to conform with the conditions and the obligations we're talking about, and then it's a commercial decision as to when that comes forward.
So what it means by that is it can't come forward earlier than that, but it could come forward later.
I just say, to wind up, I'm not convinced on this bit. And the problem for me is that people from outside can actually come and use that facility. It's not just for the people. And so I don't see that as an ancillary part of this actual development, if you like.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Starr, I would just simply repeat what I said earlier, that it's within policy CS23. There's a development framework plan with Hawkins Brown, which recognises the fact that because this is a big site, taking in combination with the site on the other side of Snellsnook Lane, it can't exist in isolation. For it to be a proper campus environment, there needs to be servicing of that.
Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, well, I've sat here and listened to everybody, but I'm very unhappy with what I've heard proposed. Just a few things we've mentioned about the roads. It will impact on Loughborough Town Centre shops detrimentally. It'll be a nail in the coffin of the Loughborough Town Centre. But the biggest thing is the historic sites of Garendon. When we was at the planning application for the incinerator, we were told that any buildings near listed buildings could possibly have an impact where they could be delisted, because it will affect the character of their setting, you see. So could the officer guarantee that when these developments built, it will not have any impact on Garendon Park, and that those buildings won't be delisted, sort of thing? Because that's what I understand will happen if the character of surrounding them, you know, is built on. Would you tell me that?
Chair, I'm right to answer. Thank you, Council. There is a detailed cultural heritage chapter that sits within the environmental statement, and the appendices of which are pretty vast. There's a huge amount of work that is done as part of that, including historic environment records, including the statutory heritage sites and non-listed heritage sites as well. So it's taken into account everything, those that are listed and those that aren't necessarily listed. In terms of, well, you ask for a guarantee that they won't be delisted, I can only go on what's in the report. It talks about it's a less than significant impact on the listing of the buildings on the other side of the road in Garendon Park. Be aware also, as you will have seen when we drove down there, there's some quite significant works going on the highway directly in front of the listed building. I would put it to you, or put it to members, that this is set behind that, with the constraints proposed, with the lie of the land, with the location of the bigger units in the natural depressions of the site, with the cross sections shown above. I think this, and again, this is an allocated site, I think the development as proposed could sit comfortably within the landscape without having a negative impact on it. But more importantly, to answer your question, without impacting on the setting of the listed buildings on the other side of the road.
Oh, I was just going to add to that. Members will also note from the report that Historic England have raised no objection.
Yeah, well, recently we had a talk by a geology professor at Leicester University about the Outwoods and the importance of the rocky outcrops and the fossils found there. And he told us that there's one more site which lies on the site that this process is going on, is only one or two in the world which is very important for fossils. Will this site be affected by the building? Or do you know about the site?
Within the chapter I was talking about, the cultural heritage that sits within the environmental statement, there is a detailed archaeological assessment as well. The conclusion of that is, I think, covered in the report, but potentially you could put on an archaeological watching brief, for example.
Morris, did you want to speak?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am very concerned about what we have in front of us this evening. I understand that we are being asked to simply, nothing simple about it, that we're being asked to accept the access provisions of this site without discussing the detail of what is proposed to be built on the site. But I would say the devil's in the detail. What is being proposed for this site is shops, financial and professional institutions, restaurants and cafes, drinking establishment, hot food takeaways, a hotel, a gym. These are all high volume traffic producers. We're also being asked to consider if the mitigation provision put before us tonight is adequate to control this new amount of traffic onto Snell's Lane. I know Snell's Lane, I drive up it only once a week, but I do drive up Snell's Lane once a week. It's a nightmare. You get stuck on the Priory Island Junction, and then you cross, and then you crawl, or I do crawl, to Ashby Road. And we're going to put another two access onto South Lane. I've heard nothing tonight, Madam Chair, that convinces me that the mitigation put in place is even remotely adequate. This is not going to work, and I'm afraid I can't support it. And in fact, I am prepared to put forward that we refuse officer's recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor. Could you give your reasons for that? For refusal in line, and if the officer will go through your points, but then when you do, if you're still going to propose refusal, we will need the reasons why.
I do appreciate that, Madam Chairman.
The application.
Yes.
That we're looking at. Okay, so the officer will come back on the points you've raised. I then have three more speakers, and then if it's about the same thing, I'm afraid I'm going to sort of start to draw the discussion to an end. Obviously, if it's for clarification and for new points to be raised, I have the officer, then there are three more councillors to speak. Okay, thank you.
I'm just going to jump in instead of Nigel at this point. I think it's important for me to stress at this point the allocation in the core strategy. As a council in 2015, this site, along with the site on the other side of Snell's Nook Lane, was allocated for a science and enterprise park. At that time, the quantum and the use and its impact on the surrounding area, the loss of countryside, was accepted in principle. That is now an adopted policy. So I have to stress that to you. In terms of the ancillary uses, you are talking about a very small percentage of the overall floor area going into this development. Not talking about it all. The majority is science park uses, which we have recommended how you can control. We're also recommending in the description of development, you control those uses so they remain ancillary. If members are minded to go against the officer's recommendation, which is your gift, you have to explain very clearly what you think it is that this development doesn't comply with. So in policy CS23, what is it that this does not comply with? Members should also be very wary regarding the highway's impact. We have had specialist advice from both the Highways England and the County Highway Authority, who have made it very clear they raise no objections to the proposals in front of you. County Highway Authority has modelled the impacts, have modelled these junctions, and have given their very clear advice. So I have to stress that to all members round the table.
Very much. I think just to clarify from my own information, on page 9 of your report, for the ancillary for the hub, I understand it, 9,565 square metres to cover everything that's been mentioned, the restaurant, cafe, gym, etc. Am I correct in that figure?
Yes, that's correct. And the rest of the floor area, which is 89,313 square metres, would be science and enterprise park uses.
Matt. Right.
Sorry, just I don't know if it might help members. And I don't know the answer, so I'm looking to officers, which I shouldn't. And you may ask them a question.
Yes.
Yep. The ancillary uses, and we've got lots of different use classes listed afterwards. Is it an option for the developer to choose from those use classes? They're not saying they're going to put each one of these things in the ancillary use, which I think they're getting the feeling members may be thinking there's every one of these things listed, but it's the scope for the detailed application to come in from uses from those listed. It doesn't have to provide everything. Or am I misunderstanding?
Those uses, or all of them, any, but up to a maximum. So all those uses, if they go for all or if they go for a selection, those together can't go above the 9,500. So it's not 9,500 per each one of those uses. That's a total number. That's the total amount of those uses. And like I said, the almost 90,000 square metres is the other uses.
Approximately 10%, just over 10%. Thank you. To come back, and then there was three other councillors, four other councillors now, and then I'm closing it.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do appreciate what Ms Jackson has just said. And in many respects, if we were discussing the science park tonight, I don't think I would have nearly so many doubts. If what we were putting up, if what we were being asked to look at was the erection of laboratories, research laboratories, research workshops, you know, the hard engineering, aeronautical, automotive, chemical engineering that Loughborough and its university are good at, I expect to see this land go for a science and enterprise park. What we have in front of us is a retail park, and I find it very difficult to access.
I'm sorry, Councillor. Over, the officers will correct me on this, 9,000, just under 10, over 10% is retail. 80,000 square metres is laboratories, science things. It is part of a science park. It's no different to my mind, personally, than having Burley Court and the other places on the university campus that we use. That's my own personal opinion. So,
I have to be very clear, it is a science park that's in front of you. Nearly 90,000 square metres of that type of use that you're saying you'd like to have is what is being proposed. Only 10% of the total floor area in front of you is ancillary uses. And policy CS3 does allow for those ancillary uses. It doesn't rule them out.
Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I accept the principles of the science park as being agreed, but my main concern is the traffic issues. And I struggle to see how the transport impact on Snelsnook Lane is considered to be acceptable. So what I propose is that we defer the application tonight and that we ask for a transport assessment on a circular route through the site where the only access is onto the A512, which I know, I mean, I live near the A512, I know how congested that gets, but I know the impact on Snelsnook Lane is going to be totally, totally unacceptable. So, as I said, I'll just repeat that I propose we defer and we ask the developer to do an alternate proposal that is a circular route so that the only access is in and out onto the A512, and that we ask for a transport impact assessment of that.
I am going back to the officers, but I think that would have been done in the traffic assessments that have already taken place. Am I right?
Thank you, Chair. A detailed transport assessment and impact assessment and sensitivity impact of that has all been done. It's a robust document. What you're talking about is essentially, I think, one point of access and a circular route around. That's not what this application is. We've got to deal with what this application is proposing. So, outline for the allocated science park. If I can just add one more in response to Councillor Forrest. As I said some time ago now, about the control of the uses, that unusually is going to sit within the Section 106 planning obligation, if things go well, for the reasons I've said. Now, within the transport assessment, the individual uses had to be quantified to make it a robust assessment. If you can bear with me just a couple of minutes, I'm going to read through what I was initially proposing as a condition, but could sit within the Section 106 in relation to the control of uses. So if you just bear with me. So use class B1A not to exceed 10,980 square metres. B1B not to exceed 13,320 square metres. B1C not to exceed 13,485. And B2 not to exceed 51,528. So that's the main science and enterprise park uses. In relation to, I think, what is the main concern, it's the ancillary uses. A1 not to exceed 908 square metres. A2 not to exceed 218. So you can see the small percentages of the overall. Use class A3 to A5 not to exceed 2,330. C1, which is the hotel element of it, not to exceed 4,963. D1 not to exceed 557 square metres. And D2 not to exceed 589. Just to repeat, that was the numbers used to quantify this as part of the TA, the transport assessments, that could, in theory, sit within the relevant part of the planning obligation.
May, May I come back, Chair, on what I propose? Yeah. I accept that we have to accept or refuse this application. I know that. But what I was suggesting was that the applicant could revise their plan and have a traffic assessment on that. I accept that we can't propose acceptance of something else tonight, which is why I said defer, but perhaps we have to refuse it and ask and suggest to them that they may look at that as an alternative.
Tillotson, we have had someone that's indicated they will propose refusal, but again, I must say we need very robust reasons because we're only discussing the application in principle.
Can I just talk about the access and the points of access? Obviously, you've got the Hawkins Brown framework master plan that did always assume access onto the Snell's Nook Lane. One of the reasons for that is because this is only half of the full allocation, and what you didn't want to do, you want it all to come forward as one allocation that feels like one campus style development. Both sides turning their back onto Nampanta Road wouldn't get that comprehensive development. Also, the junction at the top was based on that, and obviously in some ways, if there's another junction, you could. There's thought that it would pull traffic through to that main junction, but what is in front of you has been modelled by the County Highway Authority, and in their opinion, these additional accesses do work.
Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to be a bit brutal here. Unless you're bringing something new to the table, other than talking about traffic on Snell's Nook Lane, I've got Councillor Tassel, Councillor Bailey and Councillor Lowe. Councillor Tassel.
I've got 2 points of clarification, Madam Chairman. And the first one is the ancillary areas. They're going to be available and for use by the Loughborough University Science Park on the east of Snell's Nook Lane, are they? And if so, that means that there's possibly going to be another access from there on from the east side onto there to get them from the east side to the west side to use these ancillary. Am I right? Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Tassel. So, the flexible development framework plan that sits within policy CS23, you've heard that there was a joint effort to come up with a, well, in fact, Hawkins Brown were commissioned to do that. The university at the first stage is the county council, the borough council and the applicant all come together to prepare that. It's an indicative plan, and then the plan does include the hub at the centre for obvious reasons. It's got to serve what is quite a big park. In essence, this proposal put forward complies completely with Hawkins Brown. In answer to your question, in theory, you could have the other half of the hub on the east side and then linked in across. With, yes, there will be another point of access onto Snell's Nook Lane, in theory, yes, linking in with what's being shown on the map now. But that's not in front of us. But we're dealing with one half of the allocated site for which the overall site there is this flexible development framework plan.
My next point of clarification, it's going to be very quick. Have you any idea what time of the day the highways did their traffic survey on that lane? Because it's totally at a standstill during the rush hour, but you can get down it in the late morning and the middle of the afternoon without much trouble. But you go down at 9 o'clock or come down, try to get into Loughborough down that road at about between 4 and 6, you're at a total standstill.
the detailing of when that the traffic surveys, because there would have been several of them at the various points, were done at different times of day and different weather conditions, etc., would be in the supporting transport assessments. I'll go back to comments from the Highways Authority at a previous briefing session, albeit it wasn't about this, but they were talking about the Litton model, so the Leicestershire, Leicester information traffic modelling, which is a very detailed, very robust bit of data, which has all the local nuances on it. It has the allocated sites, it has the approved sites of development and cumulatively deals with that. All of that has been modelled. And the advice again from the Highways Authority and Highways England is they have no objection to this in this format with the conditions and obligations suggested.
Thank you. We have Councillor Bailey and Councillor Lowe, and then I'm closing the discussion. We've had 2 hours about on this, which I think is a fair whack, and then I've got 2 proposals, but I haven't got seconders yet to amend, and then we'll move on. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of clarification, really. You alluded to that the 40% of this sort of proposed scheme is green infrastructure. Can that be revised at all in the detailed application, i.e. can it be reduced, or is that set in stone?
It's a requirement of CS policy CS23, so it's 40% green infrastructure. The way this is approached on this site, and probably the indicative master plan shows it quite well, is so 30% on site, and then an additional 10% on the individual plots themselves. So overall, that will make a 40% green infrastructure. There's a green infrastructure management plan as well, so it'd be a separate company that'd have to be set up to manage all that. Because, as I said already, this is, in that aspect, in my experience, for a business park of this size, quite unique. It's following on the good principles set up in the first phases. Well, there's nothing to stop an applicant coming forward with the reserve matters to reduce that, but I wouldn't advise it, because the policy constraints are very strict. This is a clear aim of policy CS23, and I can't see an officer supporting it. If anything, we've been looking to see it increased, not decreased.
Yeah, I'll just put that it's, if you, in your folders, you've got policy CS23, it says retain 40% green infrastructure. It's very clear. So if a reserve matter came in without it, wouldn't be policy compliant. But on top of that, there is proposed conditions to ensure that it comes forward with at least that 40%.
Councillor Lowe, you've been very good and quiet this evening, and you are now entitled to speak.
I'm always good and quiet, Chair. I do believe that the highways have got this wrong. I really do think they've got it wrong. I think it's another clear example of somebody sitting in an office and making a decision. You know, I drive up and down Snailsbrook Lane and it's chaos. It's absolute chaos. If this application was the other way around with one access on Snailsbrook Lane and two onto the A512, I'd probably feel a bit better about it. The sad thing is that with highways saying they've got no objection, we will not find a robust reason for refusal. And therefore, I can't second your proposal to go against officer's recommendation. But I also am not prepared to support it. I think you've reached complete stalemate, Chair, because I just can't see how this is going to go through. We can stop here until 10 o'clock tonight and we will not agree, and I will not support this application.
Thank you. Now, I have a proposal that we refuse the application by Councillor Forrest. Do I have a seconder? And I need the grounds on what it's being refused as per the application. So do you have the grounds, Councillor Forrest?
What I was going to say, Madam Chair, if it would help the committee, I would be prepared to withdraw my recommendation to refuse and suggest we go with Councillor Tillotson's suggestion that we defer until we have something in front of us that we can, as a committee, accept.
Okay. go. Councillor Tillotson.
Yes.
You were... Councillor Forrest has withdrawn her proposal. Councillor Tillotson, you propose deferment. Could you give me the grounds you want to be deferred, bearing in mind we have already had detailed traffic assessments and everything else? I'm not quite sure, personally, what other traffic assessment you would want in addition to what's already on file. But if you have one...
I'm in the same quandary as Councillor Lowe. I can fully understand we've got a traffic assessment in front of us that we're all struggling with. That's the issue. So that's why I proposed we defer it rather than refuse it and give the applicant's representative is sat there, he can hear what we're saying, and it would then be up to them to develop an alternate proposal that does not affect Snellsnook Lane in the way that this proposal does. And if that was assessed by traffic, to see whether that has less of an impact. But we are in a real dilemma here, because the traffic assessment says it's all fine, and yet we know it's not fine.
I think what we have to is try and assess, and the officers will guide me, is the fact that we could have another 8 traffic assessments, and if they say the same answer as we've already got, we're still in the quandary. Now, who you would want to do the assessment, because the assessment would require other work. Now, I'm just going to take a word of advice. I have done this previously. As we do have the representative here from the applicant, we do have the right, and he has the right to respond to your proposal. Now, but we have done it before. But I will take officers' advice of whether it's going to be beneficial.
I just want to raise a little, a concern. This is a significant, you know, it's almost 90 square metres of retail, science park floor space. County Highway Authority aren't here. Now, if you have any specific questions for them, maybe we can go back to them. That's the reason for a deferral. We can go back to them. But I think it is extremely unlikely they would accept one point of access for a scale of development this size. Also, when you talk about another assessment, I sort of need to understand who you're talking that assessment to be by, because there's been a very thorough TA done by as part of the application. It's an environmental statement application, and separate to that, county have run its own modelling. So there's two assessments there. So who would you like to do the third if you are going for a deferral on that basis?
If Councillor Bentley would just like a word.
Yes, thank you. I don't see how we're going to get a different result. It's quite clear what we've got in front of us. I've listened to the whole debate, not said anything so far. I know that there's a proposition here to defer. I can't see that any deferment here is going to be of use. I would propose, if this fails, is that we go with officer's recommendation. Do I have a seconder? I know it has. I'm just saying that I can't see where we've got grounds for deferment, so I'm proposing to go with officer's recommendation if that fails.
It is in my gift on behalf of this committee that if, say, you're willing to speak just for a couple of minutes, that I think would possibly help us. If we give you 3 minutes, would that be enough?
Let's just stick to a specific question.
Yes. No. The question is regarding a further assessment, traffic assessment. Is that enough?
That's what I'm being asked.
Specific question. I think that's just another chance to talk about it.
I don't propose to make any further comments on the application. I've listened very carefully. I have a very close note of what's been said. But I would address the point about accesses. I can hear the concern about accesses onto Snell's Knot Lane. I would agree with what the officer recently explained to you, that it's very, very unlikely that any highway authority, whether it be Highways England or indeed Leicestershire County Highway Authority, would accept no accesses onto Snell's Knot Lane. Bear in mind, it is part of the approved development framework. But I am more than happy, given what I've heard, to take a deferral in the recognition that we could go away and consider an alternative proposal that brings back an application, brings back a variation of this scheme, which perhaps has only one access onto Snell's Knot Lane. I think that's the very best I can do, because I have heard and I have seen all of the empirical evidence that demonstrates that the accesses, as shown, onto Snell's Knot Lane are satisfactory.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Now, is that acceptable to the committee? No, I'm afraid not. We need that it would go back for an assessment, a revisit. Sorry. A seconder for a deferment?
Yeah,
Councillor Tassel and Councillor Tillotson. And it would be that the applicant is willing to go back and visit for one entrance, see if that's possible. Now, and that would be a deferment. Now, that is a decision you have to make. We have a proposer and we have a seconder. Can I see a show of... against a deferment?
Okay.
Yes, they've had a proposal. Oh, we want... Wait a minute. A deferment.
Yeah.
Those for a deferment.
Three, four.
Keep your hands right up. Right. So, on that proposal, it has been accepted that there would be... Would you like...
OK, so the vote was carried. It was a vote of 7 for the proposal, 4 against and 1 abstention. So that has voted in favour of the application to be deferred so that the option of one access could be looked at.
If I may, Chair, I don't think that's...
Right. I believe that that kind of deferment is not a deferment, it's a vote against. So therefore, we've refused this application on its current grounds. To defer it and say to the applicant, come forward with another proposal, is not a deferral, it's a refusal of this application. We've got to judge this application that's in front of us, and I'm sure the legal representative will agree with me. This application in front of us, we don't agree with. So therefore, it's a refusal, not a deferral.
Deferment.
Yeah, sorry, I do disagree. It's a deferment because we haven't refused the application, and it's open for the applicant to amend a scheme throughout. So if officers are happy, put it back, that it's something we could consider as an amendment to a existing application, then that's a deferral.
I'm sorry, I'm going to Ms. Jackson and then I'm closing.
I don't agree either. I think members didn't vote on whether they
There was no vote taken on the current proposal with two accesses, so no formal decision has been taken on that basis. What has been decided is that the applicant will consider a single access. If that's not, you know, we don't know what that's going to be, and we don't know what the results of any assessment's going to be. So you haven't made a decision on two accesses.
Take legal advice, please. Do we have to take it on the refusal?
No, we're happy with a deferment. The application, there's no decision made. The applicant may look at the extra access. They might withdraw. You might put an amendment. It's still open for consideration.
Madam Chairman, I've got a real issue with this, because all we're coming back with is an access. There are other issues that I've got that I would refuse it on. So when we come back, can I still talk to about those? So it's not a single issue when it comes back. It will be the whole thing again.
Yeah, the application hasn't been determined. We'd have to determine it with open minds on a fresh consideration. It'll have to come back to committee for full consideration again. It might come in the same form. It might be amended. We don't know, but it'll be for full consideration again.
The big issue is that the university haven't got this fully in line with what they're trying to propose. And I propose when they do come back, they have actually spoken to the university and we've got a good agreement around it. And I can actually support it then, possibly. But at the moment, it ain't right.
Can I just remind members that this site isn't owned by Loughborough University, and Loughborough University aren't part of the local planning authority. They are a neighbour and have been consulted as a neighbour, and that's their role in this.
Right, I'm now closing that item. We're going to take a 5-minute break. Thank you very much for members in the public gallery, but if you could leave. Gentlemen, I'm going to reconvene the meeting. We're running very close to guillotine time, that we'll have been going for 2 hours. So I have been advised, I do need your permission and agreement that we carry on for another 30 minutes, bearing in mind we still have 3 applications to discuss. So can I have a proposal that we carry on for another half hour?
Chair, I propose that we carry on.
And Councillor Bailey will second it. So, right.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be really quick. This item at 33 Station Street, Loughborough, is the conversion of a terraced property into 2 self-contained flats. That's the location we've been to today. The property with the blue door that you see there, to the side of the blue door, is the house in question. These are the existing floor plans, so you'll see it's a traditional terrace with a room in the roof, so 5 skylights. The proposed floor plans divide it up so that the first floor is 1 self-contained flat with the access as existing off the front. The second flat, we haven't got the third floor plan on here, but that would be served by a new doorway that would come off the alleyway at the side where we walked down today. Set of stairs up, lounge, kitchen, diner, and then further stairs going up again to the existing attic bedroom, which would remain an attic bedroom. Very few changes proposed to the outside of the property, just an additional window there in the outrigger at the back to serve a bathroom, and of course the new door that goes into the property from the alleyway. In terms of principle of development, it's a small unit in a sustainable location. It's not a house in multiple occupation, and I need to stress there was a certificate of lawful use submitted saying to see whether it was. It was concluded it was a C3 dwelling house, and that's the use class it would stay within, albeit it's divided. So instead of 1 C3 dwelling house, it becomes 2 C3 flats. very limited impact on the character of the area because there are so few external changes. Residential amenity is a point that we've looked at because obviously there's the opportunity to introduce some living accommodation at first floor next to bedrooms. But I would point out that because we're creating a new dwelling house, that's covered by party of the building regulations. Parking is another concern that's been raised, but the standing advice from the Highway Authority comes up with the same number for a C3 three-bedroom house as it does for two self-contained one-bedroom flats, and that's two spaces. There aren't any. It's a terraced area. There is residence parking, but there's no dedicated parking. But that wouldn't be a reason to refuse because it doesn't change the existing situation in any way whatsoever. And lastly, it's in a conservation area. There would be no harm to the heritage asset, and additionally, it conserves that heritage asset. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Councillor Tillotson, are you at, I don't have to explain the timing to you.
Thank you.
I too will be brief, Chair. I accept this application is not for an HMO, but it is still taking away what should be a family home. It's unlikely that an HMO would be supported because Station Streets and all the streets in the vicinity of Station Street have HMOs far in excess of the 20% threshold. So developers are turning to creative ways around our 20% threshold, and I am in no doubt that that is what this application is. It's a creative way around our 20% threshold. And I ask you to refuse this application. I ask you to refuse it because if you support it, it will lead to many more similar applications to the severe detriment of the local community. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Tillotson. Councillor Tassel?
Have there been any objections to the proposal by the next door neighbour? And I'm talking about, as you look at the property, the neighbour on the right hand side, because this access is a shared access where they're going to put a new door into.
Councillor Tassam, I'll ask the officer, but I cannot see any. Right, the officer will explain it to me.
There's been one neighbour at 34 who's raised a concern that the flats would create noise and disturbance and that it is an attempt to bypass the HMO policy, and also has raised the car parking concerns. And that objection has given rise basically to the key points that we've just been through. That's why they've been identified as key points.
Yes, it is. It's chronologically numbered. I'm talking about in the street, looking at it, the one to the right-hand side shares that entrance with the one that's going to be made into flats. And you're going to put a door into that that with somebody walking in there on their property all the while as well. So
we'll point out number 34 for you, but they've not raised concerns about the door specifically. They've raised the concerns set out on page 58 of your report.
I think in my terrace street, the doors are in the alleyways, the entrance doors in my terrace street. And the doors aren't at the front, they're in the alleyways, front doors.
Just for clarity, that is number 34. It's the street is numbered chronologically rather than... Yeah, so it's this property, and no, they haven't raised any objections about the additional door in the shared alleyway. It shows the red line, in any event, running down the middle of that alleyway, so I'm guessing that legally it's split between the two properties.
Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I also share Councillor Tillotson's or the Speaker's concerns about it's a little loophole that's being filled. but I can't see any reason why we would refuse this application, so therefore I propose that we support officer's recommendation.
Thank you very much. Are there any other speakers? Councillor Forrest.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Now, I'm going to get told off here, but the neighbour probably won't have objected about the shared door because he'll be a student landlord and probably won't even know that this is happening. My concern is that we are going to have a family house, and this is a house that has been in family occupation. The last time it was occupied by a family, I understand. And we are losing, if we allow this to go through, we lose a family house. Now, in Storer Ward, family houses in this area are in short supply. And I sounds a bit pious, but I think we have a duty, as much as we can, to protect family houses or houses that can be used by a family rather than by... And this will be two very small flats, you know, separate people living in them. And I don't think that this is good for the area, frankly.
Councillor, are you proposing refusal? And if so, on what grounds?
No, we've already got a recommendation.
I know we have a recommendation.
Yes, I'm happy to take us forward.
Do you want to have a...
Well, I accept the principle of development. It's not a house in multiple occupation. It will have an impact on the character and appearance of the area. We are talking about a conservation area. There will be an impact on residential amenity, and particularly with respect of the next item, which is car parking. You can't park on those streets. You can't.
No, but I think we've already had it explained to us. There was no difference in the number of people living in it than there was in a three-bedroom house. So,
they might no. I mean, a family might just have one car.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I think we've already got a proposer and a seconder for approval.
Can I just remind members, because there's a lot of opinions, and I know it's been very emotive tonight, but I must bring members back to the development plan. We have to determine our applications in accordance with them development plan policies. And so when you're raising these concerns and putting together potential reasons for refusal, you can link them to the policies and tell me which policies you think are being not complied with, and that's really what you need to do.
Proposed by Councillor Lowe and seconded by Councillor Bentley that we go with officer's recommendation. Could I see a show of hands, please? Against? I'll abstain. No. Application has been passed with officer's recommendation. Thank you very much. We now move on to...
No.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we did.
Yes, we did.
Oh, two
okay, two abstentions. Yeah. That's okay. Okay.
Just to record the vote for the tape, that was an officer's recommendation passed with a vote of 6-4, 2 against and 2 abstentions.
The next application is on page 63. And you're taking that one, Karen.
Thank you, Chair. This application is with us tonight because of the constitution, because it's a councillor or somebody who's a councillor's house. It's for the erection of a double garage and also some alterations to the front garden. This is the property we went to today, end of Orchard Crescent, so very end of the cul-de-sac. The garage that we were looking at would go here, in this little square here. Some aerial shot of the site, some photographs just to on a considerably sunnier and warmer day than we had today, just to remind us. This slide shows you the existing layout. So you've got 31 here, parking space at the side, and this is a small sort of garden area. What's proposed is to build a double garage here in the parking and garden area, and the area at the front of the house that's currently a small garden would be paved and levelled to allow access into the second part of that garage, with a retained ramp down to 31, because if you remember, there's a sort of a rise in levels up to the road itself. That's the garage that's proposed. It's a fairly classic double garage. It is 5 metres high and has some roof lights, and that in itself has raised some concerns with neighbours, but I would point out that there is no additional floor proposed in that garage, and those roof lights are also, as a result, very high. You wouldn't be able to see out of them at all, and even if you were to put a storage floor in, you would end up with a very, very limited room indeed. So it's not a concern to officers that it's anything other than a garage. Main issues: impact on the amenity of neighbours. Privacy has been raised, but I would point out it's about 20 metres to the nearest property, so when we look at our standard assessments, there's no loss of daylight, sunlight, privacy, etc., bearing in mind, as I said, that the windows don't allow any view out. We've looked at the street scene today, and you have to see it as it's a relatively mixed street scene. There would be loss of a few small trees, which we looked at today. However, none of those are protected. And also the garage itself would adjoin other garages serving other properties in the area, albeit that it is situated a little bit further forward and is higher at ridge than the adjacent garage, but not higher at eaves height. Car parking and highways considerations we also discussed today. The Highway Authority does have some standing advice where it advises that there should be a 6 metre setback to a garage to allow a car to pull in and open the door. However, that is only advice, and it is material that it's at the end of a cul-de-sac, so it would be very difficult to refuse planning permission on that basis. Similarly, it would also be difficult to refuse planning permission around cars reversing out of the garage when it's a quiet cul-de-sac and you've got numerous driveways where people reverse out of them. Drainage and, well, it says I've put drainage and flooding here, but the neighbours' concerns really relate to drainage, and there's a few points to raise on that. The garage itself is above 30 metres squared, which means, in floor area, which means it would be subject to building regulations. Building regulations would require adequate drains and gutters and so forth to be put in. The actual paved area at the front of the property is to be constructed, if you look at the application forms, using permeable paving. And just for added good measure, we're intending to attach a standard informative, really, that there's no drainage into the highways. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Councillor Bentley.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I was there today on the bus and went to have a look at this site. I think it will fit particularly well where it's going to go. I think that we've heard about concerns in respect of the positioning of the garage in respect of its height. It is actually very low, and any ideas that the upstairs effectively of this could be used should a floor be put in, I think you'd have to be a midget to use the available roof space. I don't have any problems with this whatsoever. I'd like to move off the recommendation.
Thank you. Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. Just one small question. Does the garage take, because they're not allowing any sort of drive space from the garage doors to the road, so the garage fills the whole of that square, does it? It fills the whole of the space. Yeah. So my only, I suppose, concern is, will they have, if they draw into the garage, will they have to reverse the whole length of the road, or will there be some room for them to do a three-point turn to get out, to drive out rather than reverse out? Does that make sense? You know, once they've come out of the garage, will they be able to turn round, turn the car round? Yeah, they will. Right. Okay, yeah.
Okay, I have Councillor Tassel. And Councillor Stark.
I was just going to second it, that's all.
Okay.
Are there any other...
That was a unanimous vote in favour, so the officer's recommendation is carried.
Thank you very much. We now move to page 72 of your papers. Again, this has come to us because it's through the Constitution, because it's a member of the...
Yes, please.
Yes. If you would, sir. Thank you very much, Councillor. We'll expect you back when we finish. Right, this has come to us because of the Constitution, because it's a member of staff of this Council. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Me again, I'm afraid. Very straightforward, this. Detached property at the end of the cul-de-sac called Private Drive. It's this property here. This is the back of the property as we saw it today. This is the scheme that already has approval. So it's a sort of an L-shape extension that wraps around the back of the property and then joins the existing garage. This is the scheme as amended that's back with us today. The reason it's not a minor non-material amendment is it has got a slightly larger floor.